You're listening to a message from Hope Central in Adelaide, South Australia. If you'd like to know more about Hope Central or any of our ministries, please visit hopecentral.org.au.
Well, good morning or good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're joining us. We're just so grateful that you're here joining us today around the Word of God and in this opportunity to worship. And I just really wanted to share something that I just really feel is very important at this time. Now, if you were in church or watching the message from a couple of weeks ago, I did a sermon on squinting, using the analogy that when you squint, it's like us trying to focus, you know, when we're trying to get some clarity. Whenever we're thinking, we kind of squint. Whenever we're trying to remember something, we're trying to squint. Whenever we try to see something clearly, we squint. And Jesus recommended that we need to focus in on God. We need to focus in on the kingdom. We need to focus in on Him. And by focusing on Him, that we live a very effective life. So we talked about how important squinting is as the idea of living a life of focus. I want to continue on with that today and talk about something that's a little bit sort of topical for this time. And that is today, I want to talk about the priority of truth. Living a focused life and living a life that's surrounded and focused in on truth is something that's really important and also really, really difficult to do. I think that I might be saying some things today that are going to sound somewhat controversial, or they may even kind of sound like I went too lightly on something or I didn't dig deeply enough. All of those things are a matter of perspective, and I don't intend to try to, you know, instruct anybody on sort of the right information. That's not my goal. What I'm hoping today is to talk about why truth matters and how difficult it is for us to come to the truth, and then ultimately to show that the Bible has some really great advice on discovering truth so that we're both truth tellers and able to discern truth when we hear it. So I hope that you'll join me through this whole message and really keep your listening ears. To begin with, I want to tell you a story. The story involves a couple of characters, Titus Oates and Israel Tong. Now, these two fellows were probably, you know, they knew one another, one stayed in the other one's house. These guys are from the 16th century, and these guys were ministers. They were, in those days, they were people from the Protestant tradition, although one of them, Titus Oates, had actually got involved and in the Catholic tradition as well. And these guys started a hoax. Now, whether they believed it themselves or not is hard to say, but they started a misinformation campaign that had to do with the King of England. Now, just remember, just stop for a second, little history lesson. These guys are in England during a time when England is really fearful of Catholic influences. Remember that during this time that the England had been sort of bouncing back and forth between the Protestant values and freedom from the Catholic influence. And also some of their kings and queens were Catholic. And so there was a lot of sort of infighting and gossip mongering and people on either sides of things. And it was a really difficult time. Well, these guys, we're not really sure, but it seems to be that Israel Tong, he wrote a story, sort of this information, this plot that there was to kill the King of England. Now, it was called the Popish Plot. There you see a slide from one of the broadsheets that was produced in the time, and it talks about the story of the Popish Plot. Now, the Popish Plot was apparently how the Catholics were planning, through the Jesuits, to murder King Charles II. King Charles II obviously had come along later after King Charles I, who actually was killed by his own countrymen. But there was this plot that they said that they discovered, that they've unearthed, and it was about killing King Charles II. So in those days, it was kind of easier to get in touch with the king, and they ended up coming across him when they were walking and trying to convince him to listen to their plot. And he first thought, nah, that can't be true. But then they kept thinking, well, maybe it's true. And so back and forth over several years, this plot made up by these two guys just grew and grew. They were talking about it in Parliament. They were interviewing people. They were pulling people into jail. They're putting people into jail. They were, in those days, whipping and beating people, trying to get the truth out of them. And for 3 or 4 years, the whole country of England was convinced or arguing about whether or not there was this giant plot to try to kill King Charles II. Now, what ultimately happened was that five English lords who were of Catholic, you know, traditions, training, upbringing, and but they were obviously landowners. So these are really important, powerful people in the country. Five of those people were convicted of being involved in this Popish plot that never really happened. And those five people were executed for their involvement in a plot that never happened. Not only was it just completely made up, but nobody ever acted or did anything to bring about this supposed murder of King Charles II. And not only that, but 17 other people were also executed for involvement. And those were priests and people involved in the Catholic Church and the Jesuits at that time. And then ultimately, when they finally figured out that Titus Oates had been leading them astray the entire time, they arrested him, they put him in the gallows, they convicted him, he spent time in jail, and then they beat him, they did all the things that they do in those times, and he was convicted as being this absolute traitor to the nation for what he did. Put him in jail, and then a later king, who was trying to show how much he's on the side of Protestants and not involved with any, you know, those terrible Catholic people, well, they let him out to show how much they're on the side of the Protestants. And I was listening to this story. It was done on a history program that I listened to, and they were talking about this story. And I was listening to this thing and thinking, how in the world are people hearing this completely made up story being so convinced of it with no evidence other than this one man's own writings of the plot that he made up and then said that he discovered? I was thinking, how are people like that? Because I feel like we kind of fall into this trap all of the time. Now, I could easily make references to what's happening in America. I could easily make references to things around the coronavirus. I could make references to thousands of things that are going along all around the world that people believe in spite of the fact they're not being really solid evidence. Now, I'm not here to tell you what is right or what is wrong. I'm just saying, how is it that people throughout history have gotten involved in information, or involved in stories, involved in theories that really never had a very strong foundation at all? Now, I think that one of the best demonstrations of that is in the story where Jesus meets with Pilate. Now, Pilate is the Roman governor in the time of Jesus. And he's the one that ultimately the Jewish people have to call on to get a death penalty execution for Jesus. They can do all kinds of things to arrest and punish Jesus. They've already had their trial. But in order to get a death penalty, because they want to have Jesus killed, they have to get the Roman governor, who's the occupying power, they have to get his permission. So Jesus is brought before Pilate, the Roman governor. And Pilate interviews him and talks to him, and then he talks to the other people, and he's getting a bit worried. And they have this long conversation about who Jesus really is. But Jesus makes this amazing statement. Remember, Pilate is a politician. He's there, in a way, representing himself. He's hearing things, the truth of what Jesus is saying, and he's hearing things from all these other sources, and he's picking it apart to figure out what works for him. But in the middle of all of this, Jesus says this amazing statement. It says, Pilate said to him, Pilate says to him, oh, so you are a king. And Jesus answered, you say that I am a king, and for this purpose I was born, for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. And Pilate said to him, what is truth? And after he'd said this, he went back outside to the Jews and he told them, I find no guilt in him. Now, even though Pilate said, I don't see anything, this guy is not guilty. Whatever you're saying, he's not guilty. He's even his kingdom that he's talking about is not from this world. We can't convict this guy. But yet in the end, remember, Jesus dies at Pilate's command. Nobody twists Pilate's arm in a sense that Pilate made his own decisions. Even though he was convinced that Jesus is innocent, he still has Jesus murdered. Now, so that's what we kind of wonder. Jesus says, I'm the person that am the truth, but also can give you the truth. In fact, I am a truth rallying position. Everybody who wants to know the truth is eventually going to turn their attention towards me. Everyone who's on the side of truth looks at me. And Pilate just goes, well, what is truth? And you can probably imagine, for a person in Pilate's position, imagine growing up in a world where truth was just the most convenient thing. Like, it's not right or wrong, it's just whatever works. And I've been thinking about that question about, well, what is truth? And I think that every single one of us needs to really seriously ask, what is truth? If we're not trying to find out the truth and we're just kind of going with the opinions of the people around us, the media streams that we follow, the people that talk about things on Facebook or other places, the things, even the magazines that you read or whatever it is that you get your information, the most important thing that we need to ask is, what is truth? Now, for Pilate, he has a kind of a political version of truth. That is, he's got a position, and truth is whatever is going to help him stay in his position. He's going to put down Jesus, or he's going to elevate the Jewish claims, or he's going to convict other, maybe even Roman authorities who want to do one thing, because he's worried about keeping his position. If, in fact, the Jews even threatened that, they said, we're going to go and tell Caesar that you're not a friend of Caesar because you want to see this king take over from Caesar. And so Pilate's like, oh, I might lose my position. So the truth then becomes, well, whatever's going to keep me in power. And so that's the second thing about political truth, is that it's just a matter of accumulating the authority that you want so that you can still have and do what you need. So it's not right or wrong. It's the truth is the thing that gives me the most amount of power. And then, of course, truth means, political truth means that you need someone to blame. I think I've heard someone say that a political truth is the ability to blame somebody else for what's going wrong. And I think that that's like an instinctual thing for a lot of people, that we think about, okay, I don't want to take responsibility for this, and I want to put myself in the best light. So I'm going to pick and choose the information that supports my cause, and I'm going to add information, bad information, to the people who I want to blame for how things are. And then, of course, he uses redirection. It's not them. It's over here. It's not me. It's those people. It's the system. It's this and that. And he finds a way of keeping it off of his responsibility. He effectively tries to wash his hands of it. Now, that's all about expediency then, isn't it? It's about what is going to work for you in the moment. So Pilate is thinking all of these things. And so when Pilate says, what is truth? Is he really caring about what is actually truth? Or is he just thinking, what is the truth that I need right now to give me what I want? Well, of course, that's not the truth. But before we blame Pilate too much, let's just think about this. Then I think that we're all a little bit like Pilate. We might not be politicians, but we can act politically. And that is, we can have a preferred truth. I want to give you five questions. Do you ever filter the truth by thinking about how's it going to affect your place? Do you ever filter the truth by thinking about how it's going to affect your opportunities? Do you ever filter the truth by thinking about how you can make it look like it's not your fault? Do you ever filter the truth so that you can give your excuses? Do you ever filter the truth so it ultimately serves your needs? Now, I don't want to make anybody feel bad, but I think that I do this so many times. I mean, so often I'm looking for ways to put things that are unpleasant for me, or information about me, or things affecting my life. I'm looking for ways to redirect, to push it around so it's not my fault, so that my opportunities and my position isn't affected by things. And I think that there's, in many ways, a deep sense of blindness that happens for us. And we end up hurt by that. You know, here are some questions. What is truth? Was the 2020 U.S. election rigged? What is the truth? What's the truth about the coronavirus? What's the truth about the vaccine? Is the virus part of some big plot? What about things like climate change, or, on the other side, liberal ideology and how it's being used to control people? Is the government using COVID-19 as an opportunity to control us? Now, every single one of these things, I have heard so much information and misinformation about. And what troubles me a lot is, how are we filtering this? How are we deciding whether this is right or that's right? Now, to just give you my personal opinion about things, because I'm not a person who knows everything, and I can't be in that position because I'm not at the source of all of these things. Do I think that the coronavirus is real? Absolutely. Do I think that you should wear a mask? You should protect yourself? You should do the things that the government has instituted that control pandemics, not control populations, control pandemics. We're trying to control virus spread, and I think we should obey those things. And I think it's really important that we do things, the track and trace things. These things help us control the virus that could kill people. It's a serious thing. So I think it's real. Absolutely, I think it's real. Do I think that the vaccine is going to make you grow an alligator tail? No. I think the process for the vaccine is more rapid, but still exceptionally thorough, and that the vaccines are safe. In fact, the only real side effect that I've seen so far is that sometimes it doesn't protect you from coronavirus, but there's nothing else happening. I heard about a U.S. evangelist pastor who said that God told him, either in a vision or a dream, that the whole coronavirus was invented so that people would have to get a vaccination, and that vaccination was going to sterilize the population. Now, I think that's... there's no information for that. There's no truth in that. You know, is the virus part of a plot? No, I don't think it's a giant plot. I think this is, illnesses and sicknesses have been part of human society for so long. Will people take advantage of them? I'm certain that people do, because people are always trying to take advantage of things. Now, when it comes to things like the U.S. election, I think that the very, very little amount of information has actually come out. Claims that the election was rigged is, very interestingly, there's none of that, none of the proof has actually made it out into for anybody to look at. If it has been rigged, if it has been fraudulent, if it had been stolen, where's the evidence? Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't evidence, but where is the evidence? Now, the thing is that people are making up their minds about things without the evidence. And I think that that's a mistake. I think it's really important to ask. I asked myself this question. I thought, if I'm going to go a little farther in the sermon, I'm going to say, how do I know that I'm getting the truth? And I thought, just from the wisdom of Joe, how do you know that you're getting the truth? Well, here's the thing that I do. I only listen to accountable people and sources. If people aren't accountable and the sources aren't accountable, then I'm going to just judge them as suspicious. I always need to, and I remember how important this is, to always check your biases. Everybody has a bias. It's also important to admit to what you don't know. A lot of people speak in, like, they I've seen everything. All of the reports say there's a ton of things that you don't know, and you don't need to know everything. You just need to admit to what you don't know. And also, you should not repeat what you can't prove. A lot of people are just talking about things because it fits their bias, and then they pass it on, and they become part of a problem. I just want to show you a few things that Jesus said about people and truth. So I'm going to begin here at the book of James. James chapter 3 in verses 1 to 2, and then in verse 5, he talks about how when we talk, when we teach, when we give information, we are accountable for that information. So he says this. He said, not many of you should become teachers. Now, then he explains why. He says, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, well, he's a perfect man, also able to bridle his whole body. Now, see how James says it's actually really hard to get this right. He's not saying, oh, it's super easy to just get up and say exactly. No, he's saying it's actually quite hard. So he wisely talks about the damage of a tongue that's used or misused. He says, so also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. And how great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. Now, here's something I think is really important. If anybody who teaches, and I mean especially as a biblical teacher, if you are listening to podcasts or videos or you're watching on YouTube or even going into websites of different churches, you need to know that the people who are teaching the Word of God are held to account for the things that they teach people. If a pastor or leader or somebody who gets up who is giving the Word of God to people, if they mislead the people and cause them damage in any way, they are, or cause them to make foolish choices or do damage to their lives or to others' lives, the person who gave the teaching is responsible for the outcome. So I feel, as a person who has to publicly teach a lot, that I am under this massive constraint to never say things that are going to hurt people in any way, and never say things that are not backed up by Scripture. We all are accountable, but those who are teaching, those who are giving instruction, are held very accountable. And I think this is a big thing. If you are giving people unbiblical advice and that causes them damage, you're responsible for that. So please be careful. Don't mislead people. Don't ever tell somebody something that's not backed up by the Bible. Now, second is, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 to 3, that we are biased. He didn't say, maybe you're biased. He's talking about how the human ability to judge things is positioned in a biased place. So he says this, judge not that you not be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it'll be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your eye? So Jesus is saying our vision on the truth, our perspective of people and the issue and what needs to be done and what the reality is actually affected by what he calls logs in our own eye. That is, our ability to see things clearly is affected by our own biases and our own issues. I think that this is something that's very important, is to admit that we have a bias, that we have an upbringing. We have a culture, we have a gene pool, we have the people that surrounded us, we have the groups that we got involved with, we have the outcomes of things and the consequences of things. We have all of these things that are pressuring us all the time. If you ever say, well, I'm not a biased person, you're actually fooling yourself and you have a bias about your bias. Jesus says, just be honest about it. You need to know, if you really want to know the truth about people and about life and about what's going on, you need to recognize that you've got a bias involved so that you can plan against it. Now, Paul teaches Timothy, is that oftentimes people just want to hear what they want to hear. He says this in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 3 to 4, for the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myths. Now, this is written 2,000 years ago to the very earliest of Christians. And Paul's already saying a lot of people don't really want to know the truth. They just want to know what's going to make them feel comfortable, what's going to make them feel like their way is right. They want to hear what they want to hear. They want to hear a gospel message that says, it's all about you and get what you want and do the things that you like and your sins aren't wrong. You need to listen to this because this is true. Now, Paul's saying, it's just people. People oftentimes only want to hear the things that they want to hear. It's not good for us. In fact, the way that our media and stuff, like our phones or our accounts are watching, videos on YouTube or whatever, if they see that you are interested in a certain thing, they'll just give you more of that. And you end up in this echo chamber of your own opinion where you're only reading or hearing or listening to people who already agree with you because you've kind of created this condition where you only are hearing the thing that you already agree with. Now, that's not good for us. That's not good for the truth. And there's another thing that Peter says, and he's using a reference to the Apostle Paul and his teaching. 2 Peter chapter 3, he says, our beloved brother Paul also wrote to you according to the wisdom given him, as he does in all of his letters when he speaks in them of these matters. He says, there are some things in them that are hard to understand, which ignorant and unstable people twist to their own destruction, as they do the other scriptures. He's not saying just Paul's letters and information and teaching, which can be quite complicated. He's not just saying that gets twisted. He said they twist all of the things. Now, this is what he's saying, is that complex ideas are oftentimes the most distorted. Anytime you're trying to simplify it down to the it's just the Chinese or it's just the Republicans or it's just the liberal government or it's just the system, anytime you're taking it down to the very, you're taking an extraordinarily complex thing, simplifying it, you end up twisting the truth because it's never all of something. It's all of these little things. It's all the nuances. It's all the people. It's all of the different pressures. And we're never going to know all of the inside information, but anytime somebody makes it simplified in the sense that they're taking a very complex and difficult thing, making it sound as though it is just a simple this, it's just a conspiracy, then you're really not dealing with the truth. So Peter says, you therefore, beloved, knowing this beforehand, take care that you're not carried away with the error of lawless people and lose your own stability. Can I just make this appeal? Look right in the camera, right to you, right to your heart. Let me speak to your soul. Please be careful. Please be careful. You have been forewarned that people distort the truth, and you and I, we're vulnerable. If you know that, then take action and be a better filter. Don't just accept things, and don't just sit under teachers who are distorting the scriptures. Look for authentic biblical truth and people who are accountable and trust them. Now, I want to read to you Psalm 15 because I think Psalm 15 gives us a great picture on how you tell the truth. And we're just going to go through this quickly. Psalm of David. He says, O Lord, who shall sojourn in your tent? Who shall dwell in your holy hill? Now, he gives us great information. I'm going to use this to show how do we tell who's telling the truth? He who walks blamelessly and does what is right and speaks truth in his heart, who does not slander with his tongue and does no evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord, who swears to his own hurt and does not change, who does not put out his money at interest and does not take a bribe against the innocent, who does these things shall never be moved. I hope you're like me. You're like, I want to be one of those people. It's not moved. Standing firm in the truth. Now, I just want to break those things down and give you 8 ways to be a truth detector. Here are the things that you should be looking for in the sources that you listen, the people that you listen to. And if you want to be somebody who's giving the truth, these are things, characters that you need to adopt in yourself. Number one, they're never trying to make people look bad. No slander. Slander is a very easy thing for us to slip into. In our desperation to look like we're right, we make others look wrong. You can do that in your workplace, you can say, oh, those people aren't working very hard. You can say, that other church, those people are all self-involved and they don't have the right idea of the truth. In order to feel more validated in ourselves, we can just so easily become people who slander others. If you are listening to people who are always trying to make somebody else look bad, then they're not positioned in the truth. The second thing is, we need to love our neighbors. That is, we don't participate in evil. Now, here's one of the things about people who are not telling the truth, is that they're happy to insult or hurt other people. And in fact, they talk about ways like, well, if you don't see it my way, and if you're not going to go my way, and if you're not doing this, then you are just bad. And they're happy to crush people along the way. Now, you'll see in the life of Jesus that he absolutely loved his neighbor. That is, he never let ideas crush people. In fact, story after story in the Bible is about Jesus rescuing people who are being crushed by ideology, by people's narrow view of things, who are happy to let somebody be really injured or even killed because their idea was so important. You have to maintain the command, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. If you can't promote your idea and still love your neighbor, you're not doing it right. And third, you need firsthand information. That is, you should not be relying on gossip. One of the ways that truth becomes so distorted and slips away and is so slippery is that we hear things. We don't know things. And every time we pass that on, people say things like this, and I've just kind of generalized in my own generalizing way. Everybody's saying, really? Yeah, people have all looked at this and they thought, you know, I talked to 10 people and they all, that's gathering your own point of view. That's just, and in fact, it might not even be true that everybody isn't saying. Anytime we're going outside of first-hand information, then we are in error. And we can become even more error-filled. The fourth thing is, he says, we need to value integrity and information. That is, we need to bring back and reunite character with the people that we're listening to. If people have bad character, their position on the truth is distorted already. And we need to remember that we don't listen to a celebrity. We don't listen to a political power or a political person. We don't listen to those people unless they demonstrate good character. It's absolutely vital, I think, in our day to get back to valuing the character of a person before we measure out whether they're saying is right or not. And the fifth thing is we need to have heaven's approval over man's approval. That is, we shouldn't be making preferential choices. We shouldn't be choosing and making favorites of one or another. We should not be choosing the political person that you vote for in your election and in your area. You should not be choosing that based on what you perceive or what you want. We should always be choosing based on what does heaven say about the situation? What does heaven want? Not what my finances need, but what does heaven want? Every time we try to use man's approval or man's endorsement over heaven's endorsement, we always end up in error. Number six is we should not be using self-interest. We should always put the truth over self-interest. This is one of the things that you can really tell whether or not somebody's a truth teller is, will they tell the truth about themselves even if it harms them? I mean, harms their reputation, harms their opportunities, harms their... I got to tell one short story. I was playing a sporting game, hockey, and it was like a, you know, just for fun league, you know, no referees, nobody to decide whether or not the puck, the thing you're trying to shoot around, had gone in the net or not. And one time the puck ended up going into the net, the net for my team. And it was an absolutely close game, and this goal was crucial. And everybody was arguing about whether it was in or not, but I had actually seen it with my own eyes go in. And so I said, the puck went in the net. And I thought, what a horrible experience to have my entire team just rag me for telling the truth. But I thought, I can't misrepresent this. Now, I want to know, the people that you listen to, do you know whether or not they're telling the truth? And are they really willing to say the truth, even if it makes them look bad? That's a fantastic test. Can you pass it? The seventh thing is, we should never leverage the result. That is, and we try to do this all of the time, even in the board of our church, we always have to talk about if we have any position on any decision that's being made that could be seen to be giving us an advantage. Like for example, if I'm voting on something, I have to declare a conflict of interest and we record it in our notes. Or I have to declare I can't vote on this because of my conflict of interest. For example, voting on my wage or that kind of thing. See, I'm going to get an advantage of that. So I have to step out of that, or I need to declare that I have this potential distortion. You see, you get the truth from people who don't have skin in the game, and people who are one arm's reach away from that. So they've got nothing to win. Unfortunately, huge amount of the people that we're getting information from, they need you. They want you to believe them so that they can get an advantage. Now, that's not a good way to discern whether that's truthful. And the eighth thing is, and the last thing is, they protect the weak. That is, they don't kind of get, it's actually about bribery, but in many parts of our lives, it's the opportunities that we have, the needs that we have for more, that distort our telling and our living in the truth. And is that what happens is the people with the least amount of power are the ones that lose out. And a truth teller always thinks about who is the person that's going to be disadvantaged or hurt by me not seeing this in the right lens. And I think the last thing that we need to remember is the kingdom of heaven is always our position on truth. Remember, this is what Jesus said to Pilate when he's talking about the truth. Jesus answered Pilate in John chapter 18, verse 36, and he said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom was of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom isn't of this world." Now, I just want to help you and help me right now to just get our sights off of the crazy human fight for truth. If we could just let go of this worldly kingdom and embrace the heavenly kingdom, is it what we're living for, the decisions we're making, the things we're talking about, if we thought about them from heaven's perspective, I can guarantee you would get more truth about earth's problems. If we could let go of our self-interest and our needs and our desires and our fears and intimidations, and we could just see that from heaven's point of view, Jesus is in charge. God is ruling. The Holy Spirit is powerful. I am protected now, and I am promised an eternity in heaven. When we can get our minds up to heaven's perspective, we will always see the truth more. Because Pilate's going, "Hang on a second, if you're a king, then why isn't anybody trying to support you?" Jesus is like, "You got the wrong perspective. I'm not trying to get the kingdom of this world. I'm about the king of the king. I'm the king of heaven. My kingdom is greater than this world, and it's bigger. And because of that, my disciples are able to let go, and they don't need to fight." Can you not fight? Can you let go and trust in God and let God's provision and power and will be done? Turn it into your prayer life, turn it into your worship life, and look to God for his ways. I hope these things have helped you today. I think these are really important times for us to get our focus, to squint back, and to focus in on God, His power and ability, and His truth, and to walk in that. And I want to say God bless you, and I hope that you can become a person who not only hears and understands truth, but also tells the truth and lives the truth in every part of your life. God bless you, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to a message from Hope Central in Adelaide, South Australia. If you want more information about who we are, visit us at hopecentral.org.au or join us for Sunday worship at any of our three campuses.